A man found his fiancée lying dead on the floor of her sister's home, surrounded by rose petals. Little did he know that his 911 call would be his undoing.
I'm Kathy with a K.
And I'm Kathy with a C.
And this is Killer Destinations. Today's destination is Greer, South Carolina. Located just outside of Greenville, the city of Greer was incorporated in 1876 and originated as a railroad stop on land owned by James Manning Greer. It was originally called Greer's, but the S was dropped in the early 20th century. However, it wasn't officially changed until the city's centennial in 1976. The town grew as a farming community that was known for their peaches and a textile manufacturing hub. But the addition of a railway through their city in the early 1900s was the catalyst for development. And through the decades, as the city grew, they attracted employers like BMW, which has resulted in Greer being one of the fastest-growing cities in the state. Today, downtown Greer is a place where brick-paved streets lead to boutiques, award-winning restaurants, and unmatched entertainment venues. More than 40 buildings in downtown Greer are on the National Register of Historic Places. This year, the city will celebrate its 150th anniversary, where its residents will toast the lasting legacy of their city. But the unresolved cases surrounding the murder of a young mother will cast a pall over the celebrations.
I think I might have a death. That was the first thing the caller said to the 911 dispatcher in late October 2021. The man said he just walked into his fiancée's house, there was a weird smell, and he couldn't rouse her. He said he found her on the floor and she wasn't breathing. The dispatcher told him, make sure she's flat on her back and you're going to start CPR. But he said, I think she's gone. There's blood and brain matter spattered around the living room, and she might have been shot in the neck. Then he told the dispatcher that she wasn't responding to him yelling her name, but that her eyes remained open. The young woman on the floor was 41-year-old Christina Parcell. So deputies arrived on the scene and spoke with the 911 caller, 65-year-old Bradley Post, and they asked how he found Christina's body. So, Kath, what he told them was that he had been trying to get in touch with his fiancée, but she hadn't been answering his calls. So he drove over to see if she was okay. So he knocked on the front door and there was no answer. So he goes around back and the back door is always unlocked. When Bradley walked into the home, he told the detectives that there was a strong chemical odor. He didn't have any idea what it was, and he thought it was odd, but he kept moving into the house, and the house was dark and quiet, so he walked down the hallway toward the front door. So just before he entered the living room, he saw rose petals on the ground. Then he saw his fiancée's body, covered in blood, lying on the floor in the living room. And then he told detectives, I walked over and I yelled at her, but she didn't respond. And that's when I called 911. According to the YouTube crime series Prime Crime, that day started out like a normal day for Christina. She was the mother of a 9-year-old daughter, and she walked her daughter to school, which was just 10 minutes up the street. After she dropped her off, she headed over to a job interview. So she didn't have a full-time job, and she was looking for one, so she had applied to a local veterinary clinic to be a vet tech. And at the time, she'd been working part-time for 3 years, but she knew she needed to provide a better life for her daughter, so she wanted to work full-time, and she loved her job and her colleagues. Now, Bradley knew her interview was at 8:30 that morning, so he started calling her mid-morning to see how it went, but his calls went unanswered. And finally, at 11 a.m., is when he decided to go to the house that she shared with her sister Tina. And that's when he found her body, and his life and the life of Christina's daughter were forever changed.
After checking in with Bradley when they first got to the house, detectives went into the house without him, leaving him in the front, and they also immediately noticed this like strong, pungent smell But just like Bradley, they actually couldn't identify its source. And Kathy, when the detectives went into the living room, they realized that Christina actually hadn't been killed in the spot where her body was found. They saw drag marks near her body that led toward the couch. And as they walked over there, that's where they found this huge amount of blood and then saw blood spatter that was on the window blinds and the chairs of the living room. In addition to the rose petals that Bradley saw that were kind of in the hallway, there were also rose petals sprinkled around Christina's body. Now, you know, Bradley had mentioned that he thought that Christina might have been shot in the head, but detectives were able to determine that she was actually stabbed. And that allowed them to realize that this was actually a very deeply personal attack on Christina.
In addition to the weird rose petals lying around.
Exactly. And so this wasn't a random attack. They just needed to figure out who this person was. So the detectives went to the deputies who first saw her fiance, Bradley Post, and were like, hey, tell me about this guy. When you first got here, was he acting sketchy? Was he doing anything strangely? Like, what did he look like? All of that. And the deputies were like, no, he was helpful. He was clearly distraught, but he walked through the house with us. And when we got here, he was dressed very nicely. It looked like he was freshly showered. He had on pants, a shirt, a sport jacket. Nothing looked ruffled or mussed or anywhere out of place. And then interestingly, Kathy, you know, we said Bradley and the detectives all noticed this pungent smell. By the time the forensic techs got there, there was no trace of anything. So they couldn't figure out what the source of this odor was. And then Kathy, the other thing that Bradley told investigators was that Christina's sister Tina owned the house, and Tina told Christina that she and her daughter could come live with her.
And by the way, Christina and Tina are sisters. However, Tina had a funkier first name. I can't remember what it was. So she just went by Tina.
Tina. You could find another nickname.
Yeah. Too much like your sister.
Or Christina could go by Chris.
Yeah.
I blame them both. Wait, who was older? Because I blame the older. Always.
Says the younger sister.
Exactly. So anyways, Bradley also said, you know, I called Tina to let her know what had happened, told her she needed to come home from work. But then I also said to her, hey, were there any roses in the house? Like, was there a vase of roses somewhere? Because he couldn't figure out where these rose petals had come from. And Tina said, when I left this morning, there were no flowers at all in our house. So one more mystery to solve.
The following day, the Greenville County Sheriff made a public announcement that Christina Parcell had been murdered by a person with whom she was familiar, and that she had been brutally slashed and stabbed 35 times. So with no obvious suspects, detectives had their work cut out for them, so the first person they went to was Tina, Christina's sister. And she basically said, I'm really sorry. I know she has his fiance, but I don't really know that much about her personal life because we've only reconnected about a year ago. And we had been estranged for many, many years before that. So I'm sorry I can't help you too much. And it was sometime after we rekindled our relationship that Christina and her daughter came in to live with me. So detectives were like, is this a case of mistaken identity?
It was Tina's house.
Yeah, maybe this is supposed to be meant for Tina. We're not sure. So they started speaking to the neighbors. They basically were like, let's go find out if the neighbors know anything about either of these two ladies or anybody that would have something against them. So they started knocking on doors immediately around Tina's house and looking for doorbell cameras. Now, this is 2021, so a lot of people had them, obviously. And luckily, the house directly across the street had a Ring camera. So detectives were able to collect several days worth of footage. So there were, you know, they basically brought it back to the station. And we're like, okay, we got to pour over this. Let's find out if anybody's been scoping out Tina's house. And this gave them their very first break in the case. On the footage, you could see a man wearing a black hoodie and carrying a black backpack. And so detectives are watching this video just in total disbelief at what they're looking at. And this man walks up to Christina's front door and he stands there for several seconds. And then it appears to detective that he knocks on the door and sure enough, that door opens. The last frame of that video showed this person walking into Christina Parcell's house. And this was 9:15 in the morning, just after her interview for the vet tech position. So now detectives are like, oh my God, we got to spread the net wider. So they begin canvassing the entire neighborhood around Christina's house, looking for more video, finding out if anybody saw anything.
Well, especially because they never saw him leave the house. He did not leave the house through the front door. The assumption, of course, is that he left through the back. But because of that, they don't know where he went afterwards.
Right. And fortunately, they once again hit pay dirt. They found another Ring doorbell camera on a house at the entrance to the subdivision, and it showed a man wearing the exact same clothing, carrying a backpack, and riding on a black bicycle. Now, this is when he's leaving the neighborhood at a time detectives believe was just after Christina had been murdered. But the person riding the bike was wearing a beanie and a COVID mask, so they still couldn't identify who this person was.
So, Kath, obviously the next thing the detectives are going to do is look into Christina's background to see, does she have anybody there who wants to cause her harm? And the first place they went, of course, was her fiancé, Bradley Post. You always go to the boyfriend, the husband, the ex-boyfriends, all of that.
You got to rule out the obvious.
Exactly. They learned that Bradley had a background in engineering and had started his own firm. But Kath, he had actually sold it several years prior to this murder. And so he had what they deemed to be very significant financial means. Bradley also told detectives that they needed to speak with the father of Christina's 9-year-old daughter. Bradley actually wasn't the father, even though he and Christina had dated on and off for about 20 years, which means Christina would have been 21 when they first started dating.
And he would have been in his 40s.
He would have been 45.
Yep.
During the period when Christina and Bradley were broken up, Christina met a man named John Mello, and they dated for about 7 years. 4 years into the relationship, they welcomed a baby girl. But when they broke up 3 years later, the issue of custody of the little girl began almost immediately. And Kathy, this one was a little strange to me. They both wanted primary custody of the daughter. However, Christina just kind of acquiesced to John's demands. And I don't know why. I'm sure there was a reason she did it, but I couldn't find anything, I don't know if you did, that explained why she was like, okay, you know what? You can have full custody, but I need to make sure I get visitation.
Yeah, I haven't the vaguest idea, but kind of reading between the lines of this, I wonder if she was not in a good financial way and maybe she felt like his resources would be, you know, they'd be able to take care of their daughter better. I don't know.
So that's how custody was split initially. But several years later, Christina actually changed her mind and she's like, I need to see my daughter more so I get full custody and you can be the visitation person.
She's like, I'm doing take backs.
Exactly. But that's when the fight turned ugly. Just over a year before Christina's murder, this is September 2020, it turned out that John Mello took their daughter and dipped. And by that, I mean he dipped
dippity-doo-dah.
He did dippity-doo-dah all the way across the Atlantic Ocean. Now, Christina wasn't even aware of this because, again, she only saw her infrequently, but the daughter was a no-show for the next scheduled visitation. And then the next one after that, the daughter also didn't show up. It wasn't until the following month, Kathy, that they actually figured out he was in Italy with their daughter. And apparently, there was actually a court order that he could not take his daughter out of the country, which means then he kidnapped her. So, Kathy doesn't want me to say this part because she thinks it's boring. I thought this was interesting. Tells you a lot about us. She's much cooler. So
I don't think so.
I know, totally. But back in 1980, there was a treaty that was signed by a number of nations with all of these countries vowing to resolve custody issues should one of the parents take them to another country. And of course, we know that that's happened quite a bit. There was a time for a while, actually, if you'll recall, where like Germany was super hard to work with and the Middle East was really hard to work with. And so you had all these parents, father and mother, who were squiring them off to these countries and you couldn't get them back. So The Hague had this convention that they signed that's supposed to stop all of this. And basically the countries who signed it promised, cross their heart, hope to die.
Stick a needle in my eye.
Exactly. Tap, tap, bomb, bomb, or whatever that stuff is you say. I don't even know if that applies. That if there was an issue like that in their country, they would move quickly to get that child back to where they were from.
Yeah.
So the feds in South Carolina invoked this and went through the Italians and the Italians did exactly that. Picked up the kid.
They're like, here's your kid back, Christina.
Exactly. And could you take this guy?
We signed the treaty. John stayed in Italy.
Yeah. And it was actually a guardian appointed by the court who escorted this little girl back to the United States.
You know, all the legal guardians were like, pick me. I'll go to Italy.
Exactly. But Kath, shortly after this little girl was returned to Christina, and this was just 3 months before Christina's murder, a manila envelope with a Greenville, South Carolina postmark was sent to Christina's sister, Tina. And it was an anonymous letter. There was no return address on it. But inside of it, there were old court documents from the child custody case between Christina and John. And these were specific documents in which John was accusing Christina of having been a prostitute. And there were also photos from a website with Christina's picture allegedly advertising her services. We're going to put that in quotes. And then soon after this, additional envelopes, minus the court documents, but with the nude pictures, were sent to Christina's fiance, Bradley, his neighbors, her place of work, and some of her friends. Now, detectives believed her ex, John Mello, was behind it, but all of the packages had Greenville postmarks. And as Kathy said, John was still in Italy. But while the custody issue would make John Mello a primary suspect in Christina's murder, he had a solid alibi because he was in Italy.
So getting back to the fiancé, Bradley. Now, Bradley was cooperating with the police, you know, to help them find the killer. So the investigators were like, look, we want to do a forensic search of your phone. We think there's stuff there that you may not appreciate that might lead us to clues for the killer, but we also have to eliminate you. And Bradley was like, oh my God, okay, fine. And it was reported that shortly after Bradley discovered Christina's body, he spent the time waiting for police to arrive by deleting hundreds of images from his phone. So, Kath, he hands the phone over shortly after the investigation begins, and there were still images on there he could not delete. And all of these images, the deleted and the undeleted ones, led to charges against him for sexual exploitation of minors and one count of criminal sexual conduct with a minor.
Excuse me while I vomit.
I know. Excuse me, I'm going to barf.
Exactly.
Yeah. But nothing on this freaking phone indicated that he was involved in Christina's murder.
When he was arrested, though, he was put in jail, correct?
Oh, yeah. He was arrested once they downloaded his phone, which was, I think, about a week after the murder. And he was held without bond. So he's in the pokey. This is the guy who tries to point to John Mello, the ex-boyfriend, as being involved.
The kidnapper.
Exactly. And, you know, now we have Pervy in the pokey. But speaking of John, detectives really couldn't quite shake the feeling that baby daddy, 61-year-old John Mello, had something to do with Christina's murder. So they started investigating him, even though they knew that he was in Italy at the time and had an airtight alibi. They started looking into his family and friends, and they gradually, you know, started expanding the circle of people that they were talking to because they weren't coming up with any suspects immediately. So once they started expanding the circle, they started looking into people who did work around his house, and they came up with this one individual named Michael. So this was a guy who did odd jobs around John Mello's property in South Carolina. He did landscaping work, cleaning, all this kind of stuff. So, you know, he was familiar with John. And so the detective started talking to him, and this guy was not in touch with Christina. And so the detectives were like, are you familiar with anyone else, you know, around John, any of his buddies, any friends who hang out? I mean, this is a handyman. And so he was like, well, I really don't know very many of his friends, but there was this one guy named Zach. And Zach actually helped me work on one of his properties for a bit. And so the detectives were like, okay, let's look into Zach. So they look into 29-year-old Zach Hughes. And here's the interesting thing, Kath. This guy was being paid to do odd jobs around the house for a short period of time. Zach, we're talking about. But he was actually a classical pianist who graduated from Juilliard in New York.
That is crazy.
Totally studly. And then after graduation, he taught music and he was looking for a job. And in 2017, he was hired by the Knoxville Symphony to be their principal pianist. But in 2020, COVID happened and shut everything down.
2 weeks to flatten the curve.
Exactly. And so nobody was allowed to be indoors, you know, for symphonies. And so Zach moved to Greenville, South Carolina, and moved in with a family from his church. Now, in the summer of 2020, Zach decided, until I can rejoin the symphony, I'm going to go play the piano in the park so everybody could, you know, enjoy it, listen, have some nice outdoor activity. And this was where John Mello and his daughter met Zach. So one day, John and his daughter walked up and they were listening to Zach play the piano. And John's like, oh my God, you're great. You know, I love the way you play. And they struck up a conversation.
Do you want to do odd jobs around my house?
Exactly. Would you like to work for me?
You seem eminently qualified.
Exactly. Can you cut bushes? Because exactly. I have a lot of work that needs to be done.
Wonder how that combo went.
Those piano fingers look like they'd be good with a set of clippers. Anyway, this conversation started a friendship, and John and Zach became very close very quickly. And now John's 61. Zach was young. I think he was like in his
29.
Yeah. And so he kind of became like this sort of like big brother figure to John and Christina's daughter. But detectives discovered that Zach had never met or spoken to Christina Parcell. So detectives figured there was no motive, but they kept investigating. Hey, everybody. Kathy and I are going to tell you about a book. It's called Run on Red by Noelle Eiley, and it's a thriller.
The book's tagline is, a rural country road, no cell signal for miles. A terrifying game of cat and mouse.
It's out February 24th, and I think you guys are really, really going to like it. There's two main characters. They're best friends. They've been friends for years. One is named Laura, and one is named Olivia. And when I was reading it, I realized that I was Laura, and Kathy was Olivia.
Same.
Laura's the character who thinks everything's going to be fine. And Olivia is the character that prepares for Armageddon.
Exactly.
But the book is good. It's a good book.
It is. It's one of those books where I went to the first page and like by the end of the first chapter, I was hooked. I totally had all this like stress and trying to make sure like, are they going to be okay? What's going to happen? What are they going to do? No, don't go that way.
Right.
And it lasted the entire book.
And I'm sure Kathy ran around making sure all her windows and doors were locked.
Well, no, because they always are. I would have run around and make sure yours were locked.
All right, tell them what it's about.
Well, like Kathy said, it is about two buddies. They're in college in Idaho. They're off to a bonfire. And on the road there, two headlights appear behind them. Are they friend or are they foe? And it escalates, Kathy, into this heart-pounding chase where they don't want to stop in case it's foe. And they're really hoping it's a friend, but it just keeps escalating. You really will feel every second of it as you are reading the book. It's like every chapter ends in a cliffhanger.
So remember, this book comes out on February 24th. And again, it's by Noelle Eiley. And her last name is I-H-L-I.
If you're a fan of thrillers, you'll recognize these authors' names. It has that Freda McFadden compulsive readability, a darker intensity of Karen Slaughter, all mixed in with a bit of John Marr's How Did We Get Here energy.
And if you're a book nerd, because I can nerd out on books, you can get a hardcover book, deluxe special edition with gorgeous stenciled edges. So it'll look beautiful on your bookshelf.
So if you're looking for a book to read, my only caveat is do not read this at night because you will never go to sleep. After speaking to Zach, the first thing they did was check the DMV for any vehicles that he might own. And they found that he owned a gold truck. And because remember, the detectives are still like, John Mello might be playing a role in all this. Detectives check the traffic cameras like in and around Christina's neighborhood. And these are the traffic cameras that like will capture the car's license plate in a real-time situation. And so they just wanted to see, is a gold truck coming and going? Could there be something here? Like they just needed to make sure that they covered all bases. Now, on the day of the murder, they actually found a picture of Zach Hughes's gold truck near Christina's neighborhood. It wasn't in it, it was near it. But then a second camera captured the gold truck in the area several hours later. But what really interested detectives was on this second sighting of the truck, there was a black bicycle that could be clearly seen in the bed of the truck. And it looked exactly like the black bike that the suspect had ridden from Christina's house after the murder. So detectives were like, let's go talk to Zach again. Now, Kath, as they pulled up to this house he's staying in, they saw Zach standing inside the house, but he's in front of a set of French doors. So they can obviously see through the panes. The minute Zach saw them through the glass, he just put his hands up. He was like, I'm done.
You know, the detectives are like, oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Wow. We're just here for a conversation.
Exactly. So because he did this, though, and that's exactly it, they were just there for a conversation. And because he did this, they got a search warrant for the house, his truck, and his DNA. Because, I mean, honestly, it looked like he was waiting for him, right? Like, ah, they figured it out. Got to put my hands up. Now, during the house search, they went into the garage, and there were a number of black bikes hanging up or laying on the concrete, and they were covered with cobwebs. So the detectives were just kind of wandering around, like having to check the bikes out. But Kath, as they took a closer look, not all of them were covered in cobwebs. There was one laying on the concrete in the corner that was pristine, and it matched the bike that they'd seen in the back of Zach's truck. So obviously, Zach became their prime suspect, and he was detained and taken to the station to get his DNA. Now, what they hadn't revealed, Kathy, is that when Christina was killed, there was actually blood underneath her fingernails. So that was why they wanted Zach's DNA. When the results finally came back, they were a match. It was Zach Hughes' blood that was underneath Christina Parcells' fingernails. So now with this bike and the DNA, and apparently his stature matched that of the man on the video entering Christina's house, detectives had enough to make an arrest. But Kathy, here's what happened. When detectives went to pick up Zach Hughes, he was gone. He had packed his stuff and dipped. Now, it turned out that he'd actually gotten a job playing the piano on a 4-month cruise, and he happened to be on a layover in Michigan when detectives called him to find out where the F he was. Okay, so here's a quiz. Which option did Zach Hughes take? Did he get on a plane to leave the country, or did he simply cross the bridge into Canada? It's actually secret option number 3. He went back to South Carolina and turned himself in.
Secret option number 3.
It's my favorite option. I'll be honest.
I have secret options.
That's what I heard. So Zach Hughes comes back. He's arrested and he was charged with murder, burglary, and possession of a weapon during a violent crime. Now, his phone was taken from him so Tex could do a forensic download, but then they hit a stumbling block, Kath. He would not give them the password to his phone. He said he didn't remember it. Now, somebody had made a remark that this was a man who had memorized all 32 of Beethoven's sonatas so he could play them on the piano without having sheet music, but he couldn't remember a stinking 6-digit number for his phone.
I do love that. I don't remember.
Yeah. Huh. I don't know. I've never needed to get in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, according to a TV station, KTVZ 21, almost 2 years later, a judge ordered Zach to provide his passcode. And so suddenly, police were able to get everything, including Zach's emails. In Zach's emails, they found emails from John Mello, the father of Christina's daughter, that contained the nude photos of Christina that had been mailed out previously. So now detectives know it was Zach who had sent the nude photos to the fiance, the friends, all of that, so that John Mello wouldn't be attached to them and they would have a Greenville postmark while he was in Italy.
They learned that Zach and John Mello had communicated quite a lot about John's custody dispute with Christina. And of course, John, in his communications to Zach, shed Christina in horrific light.
And Kath, they found like 1,700 WhatsApp messages between the two of them in the year that they knew each other.
So in the Prime Crime episode, Greenville Sheriff's Master Deputy Blake Wolf, so it seems like he's an expert deputy, Master Deputy, spoke about the next bombshell in the case. Serious accusations were made against murder victim Christina Parcell, some of which came from baby daddy John Mello. And basically, Kath, Christina's reputation was dragged through the mud. And John Mello was like, look, she was not a good person.
She was a prostitute.
She was a child abuser. She was involved in child sexual abuse, this kind of thing. And there was a full court press on attacking the victim in this case. But according to this episode, the allegations were investigated by the sheriff's office, but the case was closed and the findings were not made public. I don't know if the case was closed because Christina Parcell had been murdered.
Or they couldn't find any evidence.
Right.
Yeah, we just don't know.
Zach Hughes' trial for the murder of Christina Parcell began in February of 2025. And Kath, before the case began, Bradley Post, now this is Christina's fiancé who found her on the floor, who is now sitting in jail because of these, you know, sexually explicit photographs. Well, detectives had collected a bunch of his different devices, like iPads, etc., and they found additional sexually explicit images of minors. Now, this is big news, okay? And the defense wants these photos admitted, and there were a lot of fights over these photographs, whether the defense got to see them at all, etc., etc., etc. But before the trial, the prosecution made a motion to preclude all of these child abuse images.
But it's not just the images, right? Like, wouldn't the judge be like, you're not allowed to say anything about it?
Correct. You're not allowed to bring up the issue of these sexual abuse allegations. It has nothing to do with the murder charges. You're not allowed. And so the judge basically said these are unsubstantiated allegations of abuse and they cannot be admitted in any form. So the prosecutor goes first, as you know, and he lays out the case in great detail, asking why someone like Zachary Hughes, you know, this wonderful pianist
with just immense talent,
exactly, horrifically murdered a woman he didn't even know and had never met. And so the prosecutor brought out the fact that Zach and John Mello only knew each other for a few months, okay? So they met in the park when Zach was playing piano and this budding friendship happened, okay? But it was fast and furious, but it was only a few months long. That's because, you know, John takes his daughter.
What did he do?
Dips to Italy.
Thank you.
But while Zach is stateside and John is in Italy, they continue chatting with each other through WhatsApp. And so throughout this contact, John Mello is really predisposing Zach to hate Christina, even though Zach has never met Christina. And so, viewed through the lens of hindsight, it's pretty darn clear that John had been manipulating Zach. Okay. So, he basically manipulated Zach into sending the packages with the nude photos. And he's doing this by vilifying Christina and accusing her of child abuse. But the prosecution also pointed out that even though John was being manipulative, the prosecution was like, you know what? Zach's a big boy. He made these decisions on his own. He sent those nude packages and ultimately wound up murdering Christina for his friend John. And of course, the prosecution introduced the fact that Zach's DNA was found under Christina's fingernails. They introduce the license plate cameras. They introduce the black bike, all this kind of stuff, pointing to Zach as the murderer.
Now, Kath, what do you always say? Like, if you're a defendant and you testify on your own behalf, you're either like stupid or ignorant. There's something like that. I can't really remember what they were, but it's close, right?
Close enough.
Okay, what is it?
I don't know what it is, but no, it's hubris. But you know, it.
You have a saying. We've said it in other episodes. I'm not going to go listen.
No, oh, I'm not listening either. For God's sake, it's like
naive.
You're arrogant or you're stupid.
Okay, there you go. Well, guess what Zach Hughes did? He didn't only testify; he was the star witness for the defense. And Zach's testimony left everyone in the courtroom, Kathy loves this word, gobsmacked.
Gobsmacked.
And the reason this was such impactful testimony, Kathy, was because Zach Hughes admitted that he killed Christina Parcell, but he had a reason. Basically, Kathy, during the friendship that he had with John Hughes and in these WhatsApp messages and emails that the police had discovered, John had really, as you had said earlier, brought Zach into this custody dispute by telling Zach all of these horrible things that Christina was doing to his and Christina's daughter. And John wasn't even that specific in what he was saying. He did allude to the fact that he was worried that Bradley and Christina were acting in concert with each other and doing inappropriate pictures, child abuse, that kind of thing. But basically, John was just, I don't trust her. She's going to hurt our daughter. I'm afraid to leave them alone. That's why I dipped and went off to Italy. And so as Zach walked jurors through like what had happened in the months leading up to the murder, it was a statement that John had made to him about 5 months before Christina was killed. And Zach testified that John had said, if you believe my daughter is in grave danger, would you be willing to kill Christina for $5,000? So Zach told the jury that he was shocked and insulted by the request and gave John an immediate and unequivocal no. And according to Zach, John came back to him a few weeks later and he actually upped the ante. He said, okay, will you do this if you believe she's in grave danger and I give you $10,000? And so Zach testified that he didn't say no. What he told John was that the only way he would ever even consider killing Christina was if he was absolutely 100% convinced that their daughter was not only in danger, but that the only way to rescue her was to permanently eliminate Christina from her life. And so, John provided Zach with information about his daughter's suffering and abuse. And Zach said, well, I need to do a little bit more research on it. Like, I need to get more information. So John directed him to some of John's friends and said, they can confirm what I've been telling you. And so Zach did reach out and heard the same stories. So now that Zach is fearful that John's daughter is suffering from physical and sexual abuse based on what he was told, Zach actually called Child Protective Services and he said, hey, I have seen this young girl be verbally and physically abused by her mother, so you need to get over there and you need to take care of this. But then he immediately admitted in court that he'd actually made up the part about ever seeing this, but he did it because he wanted to give the daughter the opportunity to be taken away or at least taken to a different room from a CPS worker so that the daughter would be away from Christina and could actually tell this CPS worker the truth about what was happening to her. But CPS didn't respond the way that Zach had hoped, which was removing the daughter from Christina's home. And so that was when Zach decided to murder Christina. He testified that it was not about revenge, retribution, anger, anything else of that nature. He felt he had a responsibility to protect this 9-year-old girl.
So now remember, the judge had previously ordered the defense not to bring up any of these unsubstantiated allegations of abuse, okay? So the defense attorney had Zach on the stand and he would ask Zach a question and Zach would throw in this abuse. Well, I did it because she was being abused. And every single time this came up, the prosecution was hopping up and down and, you know, the objections were being sustained. And then the judge would turn to the jury and say, disregard that.
Like, act like you never heard it.
Pretend you didn't hear that. But anyway, so at one point, the defense attorney flat out asked if he killed Christina. And Zach Hughes looked straight at the jury and said, yes, because I believed it was absolutely necessary to save the daughter. And I was right. So statements like that, they drew another objection. Everyone's whatever, pissed off on the prosecution side. And once again, the jury is instructed, oh, don't think about that thing that we just talked about.
The prosecution must be getting a lot of exercise, though, with all that hopping up and down.
There was a lot of hopping up and down. And so the judge looked at the defense attorney at one point and was like, counsel, you have to control your client. And the defense attorney said something like, Your Honor, I am asking questions in a manner that is consistent with your orders, but my client is fighting for his life and he has to use his own judgment in how he answers the questions. Something like that.
That's a good response.
I know. Talk about clanking balls.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So that attorney was not doing anything wrong. It was all about Zach throwing in these statements about the abuse
to justify why he killed Christina.
Totally.
In his mind, anyway.
Totally. And the judge kept saying, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, don't think about that. Forget about the abuse. That was allegedly happening.
It was alleged.
Exactly. So while on the stand, Zach went through his actions on the morning of the murder. And basically he was like, I have to get inside Christina's house without her making a fuss about things. So what he did is he bought a bunch of roses in one of those like long rose boxes. So it looked like he was a gift deliverer, but he put a knife inside the box. And so she opens the door, he goes in, shuts the door behind him, and he immediately attacks her. And he told the jurors, you know what? I didn't want her to suffer. I wanted to kill her, but I wanted to knock her unconscious so she didn't have to feel anything. So he started punching her. And he said, I don't know how many times I hit her, but she fought back and she scratched his face. He then started stabbing and stabbing and stabbing and slicing and cutting. And it was a frantic, frenzied nightmare. Once she was dead, he realized his DNA would be under her fingernails. And he was like, oh my God, I gotta fix this. So he starts looking around. I gotta find something that's gonna eliminate my DNA. So he finds paint thinner. So when he finds his paint thinner, he starts cleaning the blood off her hands and from under her fingernails. And it was the paint thinner that caused the odor that Christina's fiance Bradley and the police smelled when they arrived at the house that day. And so, Kath, while Zach was on the stand, he told the jury, as soon as I left Christina's house, I felt the most enormous wave of relief wash over me because I knew from that moment on that little girl would be safe from the sexual abuse her mother was perpetrating on her. And then, of course, yeah, more objections. And then he added, and this is when the courtroom went crazy. He says, and there is proof to that, and the state is hiding it from you.
Boom.
Yeah. And everyone's like, rah, you know. So I have no idea, honestly, if the prosecution requested a mistrial, but the judge, if the motion was made, it was denied because they just kept going forward. So the case was submitted to the jury, and fewer than 3 hours later, they came back with their verdict, guilty. Essentially, the feeling seemed to be that no matter what Zach's reasons were, there's no place in our society for vigilante justice. You can't kill someone just because their ex-boyfriend says how evil they are.
And I would argue too, yeah, he went to CPS, but there were other avenues he could have explored.
Aside from murder, I agree with you.
Maybe just one. There was probably
at least one. Thank you, Captain Obvious.
He acted like it was the be-all and end-all, though. I called CPS.
Yeah.
And they didn't do what I wanted, so I'm killing her.
I had no choice but to kill her.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, exactly. And John, the whole time, was saying, I can't be the one to kill her. I'm too obvious a suspect.
Right.
So I'm going to chill here in Italy while you do my dirty work.
Exactly.
And Zach was like, okay, I'm going to tell the jury why I did it, and they're going to side with me. But it turns out he was quite wrong. Anyway, the judge was like, nay, nay, fair maiden. He sentenced Zach to LWOP plus an additional 6 months, 6 months in jail because he had been held in contempt of court.
I bet he was shaking in his boots when he heard about those 6 months in jail. No, please don't make me do that.
Exactly.
I really feel like the judge was like, huh, I'm the boss.
Exactly.
You're not the boss of me. I'm the boss of you.
Yeah.
6 months in jail, should you ever get out of LWOP?
The judge was probably also like, see, it does count when I tell jurors to unring the bell. They were able to unring the bell. Anyway, Bradley Post, Christina's fiance, is still awaiting trial on these sexual abuse allegations and continues to be held without bond. John Mello, the father of Christina's daughter, was arrested outside the courtroom after Zach's testimony for being an accessory to murder before the fact. He is also awaiting trial.
We want to say thank you to a listener who after our last episode, this was the Pike County Massacre episode, her husband is a cousin of the Rodens, and this was the family that were killed. And so two things. One, she told us that we pronounced Appalachia correctly, which was awesome. We try really hard to get this done. And our most recent fail, do you remember this? It was the Slender Man episode.
Yes.
And we were calling it Waukesha. And one of our listeners very nicely told us it was Waukesha.
Right.
We're never going to live that down. But anyways, she thought the episode was great. Thank you so much for reaching out. She approved of how we condensed it because you had all of these moving figures and names, and half of them had one last name and half of them had the other. But it was very nice to hear, and thank you very much. And I know after last week, you were really hoping to hear Kathy's explanation of how to download from not an iPhone.
Oh, yeah, that's not going to happen today.
Yeah, it's not. It's late. It's 2 days before we have to drop this.
Exactly.
We're going to go. But next week, for sure, she will find out how to do it, and then she'll tell you.
I'll ask somebody else with an Android. I'm just kidding.